Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. South Dakota has a $19.4 million surplus for fiscal year 2019. The Oglala Sioux Tribe legalizes same-sex marriage. Plus, the South Dakota congressional delegates confront racism, accusations of racism, and election season rhetoric. The Dakota Political Junkies join us today for a look at a few of the top political stories of the week. John Hunter is publisher of the Madison Daily Leader, and he joins us on the phone. Hey, John.
Hi, Lori.
Also with us, Jonathan Ellis, columnist and investigative reporter with the Argus Leader. Jonathan, thanks for being here.
Is it really election season, Lori? Really?
Doesn't it sound like... It kind of sounds like election season.
Okay. Is it ever, if it has to be.
The better question is it ever not election season?
That's true. It seems like as soon as one election's over, we're rolling into the next one. So here we are.
All right. Let's start with the budget, because that's another maybe not surprising story, that $19.4 million surplus. We earned a little less than we thought and spent a little less than we had planned. John Hunter, start us off with this, please.
I'll put that into the category of not a surprise.
Right.
I think that's pretty well what happens most years. In fact, I'm almost startled by the accuracy of the sales tax forecast. Kind of less than 0.5% difference from what was forecast were the actuals. So,
right.
Pretty remarkable there. And then I don't know exactly how they underspend budgets. You know, governments often will say, "Hey, I've got money to spend. I'll spend it." Apparently we have some discipline that we don't always do that. And so, I think it's good news for the state. This has happened many times, and sometimes I think it might even be a little planned, so you have some discretion at year end to address something that needs addressing. But I would call this no surprise.
Yeah. Do you think it's manipulated or planned? I mean, when you say it's a little bit planned, do you think it's, we want to make sure we have that story, so we always try to spend a little less?
Is there a word between planned and manipulated that we could use?
Probably. I don't know if
I'd
I
like
can
to
think
use
of
that
it.
One. I think, yeah, I think it's, I don't think it's necessarily manipulated, no. But I do think that if you're going to make a mistake, try to make it on the side where you have a little extra rather than you run a little short.
Right.
So I think that's what they try to do.
Jonathan Ellis, my question for you is, how come my personal budget never works out the way the state of South Dakota's budget works out?
Well, you need to open up a gambling joint.
Okay.
And your equivalent of video lottery, and then you need to institute a bank franchise tax, and then maybe things will start to work out for you.
I got
to
rethink things. I really got to rethink things. Anything in this story, Jonathan, other than, hey, no surprise?
Well, I mean, I think it reflects sort of a continuation of the budgeting priorities that Dennis Dugard established when he came into office in 2011, and I think that Kristi Noem is following that blueprint as well. I mean, Dennis Dugard, every year would announce surpluses that would be added to the reserves. Now, going back to Governor Mike Rounds, Mount Rounds would actually budget using reserves. So there would be times when they would reuse reserve funds. They may have used some reserve funds during Dennis. I don't know that they ever did. And the reserve funds that we've built up, most recently now with this 19.4 under Dugard, they built up quite a substantial amount of reserves. I mean, much more than when I was covering the legislature under Rounds back in 2009. So there's not been there's been a great reluctance by the former governor and possibly the current governor now to use reserve funds.
All right. Is that what are those reserves for? Just what you think they're for? Reserve. I mean, emergencies? Is that, do we have a sense of that? Because I'm trying to think back to Governor Dugard's budget addresses, and he would explain that, and now I just can't remember, what he would say, that we only use the reserves in these cases.
Yeah, I think that the Governor Dugard's philosophy was that you use them for probably like one-time investments where you have an opportunity, where the state has an opportunity to, put some money into it. But certainly I think he abhorred the thought of using them for ongoing expenses. And so, and that had been occasionally under his former governor. And remember, his last, under Governor Rounds, his last budget as he's leaving office, and we had an emergency, arguably, with the recession, he was going to budget 5% cuts along with 5%, reserves. And for Dennis Stuttgart, that he was philosophically opposed to using reserve funds to for ongoing expenses, and so his cuts went much deeper.
All right, let's talk. Let's keep the conversation on money a little bit, because we're looking at some fundraising numbers for 2020. That fundraising and raising money has begun. John Hunter, we're looking at U.S. Senator Mike Rounds, and of course, Dusty Johnson. What do we know about the money in the bank?
Well, those are quite different. In fact, those two candidates. Of course, Senator Rounds running once every 6 years, so really kind of has some momentum that can be built up over long periods of times. And Representative Johnson is more like, the day after the election, you have to start fundraising for the next one because it's just a 2-year term. But incumbents enjoy a natural advantage. Whether that's good or bad is up to the American people. The way our fundraising and our contributions are set up is that incumbents seem to be able to get that pretty readily. And so it's natural, I think, that the incumbent would almost always outraise the challengers. And in South Dakota, where you have, you probably will have less well-known challengers, they start out behind and often stay behind. It's really hard to kind of put those fundraisings together at this point. And so the money in the bank right now belongs to the incumbents.
All right. So for Senator Mike Rounds, that's $1.4 million. And his challenger, the Republican challenger, Skylar Borglum, it's too early to know what she has. But Jonathan Ellis, let's talk a little bit about her plan, because she's talking, more of a Facebook video sort of campaign. What do we know about how she's targeting Senator Rounds?
Well, and I think that reflects what John was just talking about, that a challenger is going to be usually always behind, and so you have to kind of find other ways to, try to run a successful campaign. And social media, that's a inexpensive way. Facebook, Twitter, other social media, that's, I think, what she has indicated she's going to be, an area where she hopes to exploit an advantage. I think she kind of referred to the fact that she can't have a dinosaur or old school campaign. She's got to do something new, and that's exactly right. I mean, you don't have the money to do certain things that traditional campaigns do, and so that's really kind of the way that the challengers have to go at this, at least until they get enough traction where they're starting to raise money of their own.
Right, but the dinosaur has $1.4 million. And the other dinosaur, John Thune, well, he's got a lot in the bank, even though he's not running.
Yeah, I mean, and he continues, he started raising a bunch of money after he won in 2004, anticipating, of course, that he would be vulnerable to a challenge in 2010. That never happened. He never was even challenged. So he's been able to build up a pretty steady amount of campaign cash. He's one of, at least last time I looked, had one of the biggest funds in among senators, and he uses that then to help out other candidates who are in tighter races. So that money just doesn't sit around, General. I mean, he's accumulated a lot of money, but he also uses that money in other races.
Yeah, John Hunter, does Dusty Johnson have a challenger on the horizon?
Well, I haven't heard of any yet. I would guess that the Democrats would come up with a candidate. I mean, there's some candidates from previous races that would be possible, but I have not heard. And, even though Skylar Borglum announced, I guess, 2 or 3 weeks ago, that's still pretty early for a November of 2012. Now, that one's, I guess, I take that back. The Borglum thing would be a primary, so that would be a year from now. But a challenger to Johnson would be a year and a half from now. That's a long ways away.
Right. All right. Since we're talking about Senators Thune and Round and Congressman Johnson, let's talk about what the heck is happening in the U.S. House, because I was trying to sort through some of the articles in the national news this morning and got dizzy with the accusations of President Trump using being a racist against four U.S. Congresswomen, and the procedural fiasco that was sort of happening on the House floor with what can be said and what can't be said. And it all boils down to this idea that Senator Thune and others are saying, everybody calm down. John Hunter, kick us off here on how this all got started and how we should sort of look at it here in South Dakota.
It's a great question, and I tried to prepare for that a little bit, guessing that we'd talk about it. And it's a hard subject, and it's very sensitive to a lot of people, and both sides, or maybe three or four sides to this issue, right, are all sensitive to every word we speak, so I'll try to choose mine carefully as well. You know, either using racist comments or being called a racist are both serious events in today's America. And this got started, of course, with some tweets about from President Trump about telling some freshman congresswomen to go back to the country they came from. And so people have interpreted that as a racist thing. They are women of color. They are all American citizens. Three of them were born in the United States. One immigrated as a child. And they are all duly elected by their congressional districts. So most people, at least the things that I've read, consider the comments out of line. Whether it was racist or not, he didn't use that word or didn't say they should leave because they're black or something to that effect. But there's an implication there that he's targeting those people. And it's very difficult because people, you know, there is a paradox, Laurie and Jonathan, on the whole racial discussion, because on one side we keep trying to raise awareness about racial things, and we do a lot of counting, you know, how many of Google's employees are of this race or this race, and we have set asides for different things based on race, and then on the flip side, there sometimes we're not supposed to talk about that and not bring up race and those things. So I think it's very difficult. Any politician navigating these days, I think, will be jumped on regardless of what they say or don't say.
And by that, you mean Senator Thune and Rounds, or do you mean the president?
Well, you know, I think getting more to your direct question on how our delegation handled that, you know, Senator Thune, I think, was eager to pivot to another topic. It's like, you know, gee, he shouldn't have said that. And by the way, the economy is doing pretty well. And I understand that too. And Senator Thune is caught in he's a leadership position in the party that the president belongs to. And so it's a tough position to be in. And I think almost everyone is kind of saying he shouldn't have said that. But whether it rises to that, and maybe Jonathan can expand a little bit upon the action in the U.S. House. And then again, that's the words that Representative Pelosi could use and so on. But mm-hmm. It's a very challenging, very hard to do. And people will interpret, I think, what our delegation says differently. Not everyone is going to interpret what they said.
So it seems like Senator Thune in his comments, standing by Mitch McConnell, you know, kind of let Mitch McConnell do some of the speaking and then pivoted and said, now it's time to look at this. Senator Rounds seems like he was almost trying to translate, saying, I believe the president is attempting to point out their unproductive anti-American criticisms. This whole thing is a distraction. And then Dusty Johnson seemed to be the most direct statement. We're saying he vehemently disagreed with the far left members of House on policy. Those are his words. But he believed Donald Trump's comments were inappropriate and the wrong way to communicate. It's not helpful. Jonathan Ellis, what do you make of all this?
I make of all that there are a lot of Republicans in Congress who are really frustrated and fed up with the fact that the president, who's the de facto leader of their party, seems to revel in the fact of ginning up the outrage machine by saying stuff that a lot of people disagree with. I mean, they don't want to be talking about this stuff. Right. You got Dusty Johnson, who's going to be running for re-election. You got Mike Rounds, who's going to be, they don't want to be talking about this. They want to be talking about the economy and stuff like that. And so that's what I read into it. And as John said, of course, you know, there are some people who are, you know, going to demand that they go further and denounce the president. And that's difficult to do too, because, you know, you see this on social media, a lot of the president's supporters who were saying, well, that wasn't racist at all. And, you know, so it puts them in a position where they just don't want to be there. You know, they don't want to have to every week have to go out and talk about the latest dumb tweet that the president sent. And so they're, I'm sure they're very frustrated.
Yeah. And let's talk about this from a media standpoint, because it's interesting to sort of watch how different news organizations have covered it. News organizations struggling with whether or not to say it was racist or racially charged or a racist trope. Some sort of pained euphemisms come out. John Hunter, do we have a problem just saying something's racist?
I think it's becoming a problem. I don't think it has been in the past as much as it is becoming now. It is interesting, I think, that you're referring to, you and I may have read the same article on the Associated Press style book and how you're supposed to kind of handle that. And most of us use the style book, and it's a method of trying to be as clear and consistent as you can across platforms. And so I think...
I mean, that's the question. Do we have a hard time talking about race? Then do we have a hard time talking about racism?
I'd say yes. I think we are challenged by that. And we're challenged more, again, as you have these conflicting things of politically correct or incorrect combined with the apparent ongoing importance of this issue. So you have an issue that needs to be talked about that people don't have a very good way of talking about it. And so, yeah, I think it's very difficult. And frankly, without being overly defensive of our industry, I think media tries its very best all the time to, not all outlets, of course, but tries to interview people and write down what they said and not try to make implications of what the media person, the reporter, is trying to say. But yeah, I think it's hard and it's getting harder.
Yeah. Jonathan, we talk about how Republicans are just, tone down the rhetoric. This is not helpful. Let's come up with a better conversation. And Democrats are saying, hey, it's time to call racism racism. What's the hesitation, Republicans? How are Democrats playing this conversation out, Jonathan? And is it going to work and be an effective way to address the problem?
Well, if the problem at the end of the day is the president's tweets, no, that's not going to affect him. I mean, he's going to continue tweeting from now until his Twitter account is no longer active. And so if that's the problem, I mean, I think that, and any time, and it's not just this president, any time other presidents or other leaders of parties or other have said something that might be controversial, well, the political opponents always jump on it. It's always the game you play. Well, do you agree with them? You should denounce them. I mean, that's always been in politics. Now, it's been sort of with the president and his tweeting and or comments he's made at times. I mean, he has definitely accelerated these types of news cycles and basically throwing gas on the fire here. So, I want to go back to what John was talking about in terms of the media part of this. I mean, there's often a reluctance, among media organizations to call something racist or, because we're taught not to have, interject opinions or value judgments or whatever. And so oftentimes, media organizations, I would have trouble labeling something a racist, unless it's very clear. And so that's kind of the Donald Trump presidency has sort of rewritten the rules for, I think, some media organizations for sure on how they approach these issues.
And then the flip side of that would be media organizations that are driving, demanding that comment from someone like Congressman Johnson, demanding that he take a stand one way or the other. Those statements, they're not issuing those statements for their health necessarily. Maybe they'd like to not issue a statement at all.
Agreed.
So much to talk about here, but we'll let you go back to doing the journalism that you do here in the state of South Dakota for all of us. And John Hunter, I did want to talk to you, and maybe we'll have to do it next time, about opioid abuse in South Dakota, but send people to your editorial this week on the Madison Daily Leader. Could you recap that editorial really briefly?
I'm eager to talk about that, and we'll be very brief right now, but opioid-related deaths in are declining for the first time in a long time. As you know, this is probably considered a national health care crisis, where people, opioid abuse and deaths from that, and both South Dakota and Minnesota have shown declines in two consecutive years. And so my editorial and opinion piece, labeled as such, said let's keep our foot on the pedal and keep working to reduce it further. Let's not claim victory quite yet.
All right. Find more information at avoidopioidsd.com and read the editorial at dailyleaderextra.com/opinion. And Jonathan Ellis, you can find his work at argusleader.com. John Hunter, Jonathan Ellis, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Lori.